better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out door.
Come over here, kid. What is up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? A little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
Mashed potatoes, yeah.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan. Thanks for tuning in. Last Sunday, this festival, Farmers Market, held their annual celebration of the Gravenstein apple. The Russian River convivium of slow food was on hand, and as usual, they were pressing fresh Gravenstein apple juice. It is the best apple juice in the world. There were several chefs who were doing little samples of various Gravenstein apple creations, and it's just a really great festive day at that market. And as part of Slow Food's effort to bring some attention to what is really a commercially endangered apple, they've enlisted, 75 dozen restaurants throughout the Bay Area to put special Gravenstein dishes on the menu throughout the month of August. So when you go out to dinner, be sure to look and see if there are any special Gravenstein selections at your favorite restaurants. It's become a tradition for Mouthful to join in the celebration at the Sebastopol Farmers Market on Gravenstein Day. So last year, we talked to Alice Waters for the full hour. This year, I turned to three local personalities, each of whom is involved with the Gravenstein from a unique vantage point. Here's our conversation. Good morning and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan, and thanks for joining me both here at the market and on KRCB when this is broadcast. It is Gravenstein Apple Day here at the glorious Sebastopol Farmers Market. This summer has just been so perfect from my point of view. If I was a tomato, I probably wouldn't be really happy with it, but I love these beautiful mild days when I can come to the market without slathering on sunscreen and carrying my parasol. Just the soft ocean breeze, you can practically smell the brine in the air. And one of the things that this means is that the Gravenstein apple is a little bit later ripening than usual. When we were here last year celebrating the Gravenstein, there were plenty of ripe apples. But I know that they're a little bit slower, as so many things are this year. But that's okay. It's nature. There is no schedule except nature's. I'm really excited about the guests we have today. First of all, I was thinking, oh, I've got to have Gay LeBaron on to talk about the Gravenstein. And then I realized I've never had Gay on before. And what am I thinking? So, Gay, I hope, welcome to Mouthful. I hope this is one of many visits.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
The reason that I wanted you on today was to talk about Nathaniel Griffith. Griffith Woods is one of the most beautiful places, I think, in Sonoma County. I've been to weddings and birthday parties and memorial services there with that beautiful creek and the redwood grove that Nathaniel planted. But he planted more than the redwood grove. Can you tell us about him?
Well, I think that you know, in a teasing way, in the old history books, they referred to Griffith as the grandfather of the Gravenstein, which I think is cute, but true, because the well, the Russians actually brought the Gravenstein to Sonoma County way back in the 1820s, right. Probably. That invasion didn't last, and it was later on when German settlers started bringing it into the East Coast states that it really got a start in this country. And Griffith was the first one who came to who planted an orchard here. I think it was 1883, and it took off immediately. And he had a lot of help, and people don't realize that Burbank was his friend, and he worked with Burbank, and they worked together to increase the yield on the trees.
Now, some I've read some accounts that say it was Burbank who actually introduced him to the Gravenstein. Do we know?
That could be. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe somebody does.
Yeah, it didn't sound like there was a lot of authority. There was just this one little sentence about it.
And there's always a big question of where did the Gravenstein come from? Some people say Denmark, some people say Germany. And, of course, it was Schleswig-Holstein, which was sometimes Denmark and sometimes Germany, depending on the politics. Mm-hmm. So
there at Griffith Woods, which we should say is on Laguna Road in Santa Rosa, I think the address of what remains today is 1880 Griffith Woods, 1880 Laguna, and then down along
the
long
creek,
roadway. Now, are there records about how many acres he planted of the trees?
Oh, yeah, I don't know how many, but it seems to be 800, but I'm not sure. I wouldn't, don't take that because I'm talking off my head.
Mm-hmm. And then how were they sold back then? Did they distribute them by rail car? Were they consumed mostly locally?
I think they were consumed mostly locally because this is the sort of the curse of the Gravenstein is that it doesn't ship well and it doesn't last a long time. What really got the Gravenstein going, besides Nathaniel Griffith, was World War I because and also there was a convergence in the 1880s before World War I. There was kind of a convergence here in the West County of Nathaniel Griffith and his Gravensteins and a guy named Joe Hunt and his sons. And Joe Hunt developed a dehydrator that was better than the average dehydrator, and he started drying Gravenstein apples, and that was what they were really good for in those days before refrigeration.
You could ship them.
Sure, and you could ship them. And of course, Hunt then opened a cannery in Santa Rosa and then went off to the Sacramento Valley to can tomatoes, and that's the parent of Hunt's Foods, which is huge, now owned by Colt Revolver or something. Smith and Wesson, that's what it does.
Oh, really?
Go figure that one.
That's a great bit. I bet you could win a trivia contest with that little bit of information.
Right. Yeah.
What else do we know about Nathaniel Griffith's life? I know that he planted those redwood trees.
Well, he had three amazingly talented daughters, one who was a poet, one who was an artist, and one who stayed home and ran the orchard after he died.
Mm-hmm.
And handed down that beautiful place that is Griffith Woods.
Now, there's the old amphitheater there. What sort of things took place? I don't know if anyone here in the audience has seen Griffith Woods and the amphitheater, just moss-covered. Oh, I just sit there and I imagine these great political, rallies and conversations.
I don't know about political, but knowing what I know about Alice Griffith and knowing the Griffith sisters, they probably had some wonderful kind of dance recital kind of poetry reading.
I imagine that too,
kind of,
sure.
That kind of thing.
Cultural and, literary
political.
Exactly.
And, you talked about who bought these Gravensteins. There was a guy in Santa Rosa whose name we know pretty well, named Mark McDonald, who, as soon as the railroad came to the Central Pacific Connection Railroad, it came to Santa Rosa in the late 1880s, and you could ship fruit all the way across the country. And that was just about the time that refrigerator cars were developed. Mark McDonald became a fruit broker, and he started going around to people like Nathaniel Griffith and buying up fruit and shipping it out. And there were railroad cars with Santa Rosa brand fruit on them, which was his brand, going out of the depot over there on North Street, and going east.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a huge thing for the market. And that about by 1890, roughly.
About 1890.
Yeah.
And what year, what time period would you say the Gravensteins really peaked in Sonoma County?
They peaked in, they first the first peak was World War I, because Europe was so torn up that there was very, you know, food was a problem after World War I in Europe, and prunes and dried apples were what shipped, and because of that pop that we got in after World War I, in 1920, Sonoma County ranked 8th in the nation in agricultural production, not in the state, but in the nation.
Nation, that's remarkable. You know,
and prunes and apples were a big part of that. Mm-hmm. Of course, chickens were too, but...
Prunes, chickens, and apples.
Yeah.
And it was my understanding that back in the 1880s, when Griffith put in the apples, and for a time they were taking out vineyards to put in apple orchards.
We just keep, you know, if something
pendulum.
Goes wrong with wine, we'll probably have hops back any minute, you know. Uh-huh. I
mean, we already have some. We've got a couple of hops yards.
That's right.
And do you see a time, do you think we may rip out vineyards and put apples back in at some point?
I wouldn't dare say that. No, I have no idea. I'm not a futurist. I look back, I don't look forward, and I'm not making any predictions ever.
But a great, a great historian. At the peak of this whole apple period in Sonoma County, we had canneries in Santa Rosa, we had canneries in Sebastopol and Grayton.
I bet. We had a lot of packing houses. Sure. Look, you know, the names, very familiar names were apple names like Hallberg and O'Connell and Hodel and Garcia and Barlow. I mean, these were all huge orchards. There were 13,000 acres of apples here in 1947 after World War II.
When did we start to first see the decline in the orchards?
Well, you know, it's interesting because there was a little tiny decline in the 50s, in 50 and 54, and it not huge, but I mean, it went down to like 10,000 acres and then dropped another 200. And people could explain this by saying, well, you know, when the apples had a bad year, when the crop wasn't all that great, they sold off an acre for somebody to build a house. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, that became illegal. As zoning came in, and mercifully, otherwise, can you imagine after the influx of the 70s what we'd have left around here? But that's what saved them, and, you know, financially. And then when you got to the point where you couldn't do that anymore, they didn't have a fallback position, and that's when it really, really started to drop.
Uh-huh.
So I think, when we started getting Granny Smiths from New Zealand because they would ship and Gravensteins didn't, that's what did it.
Mm-hmm. But today we have about, I think, 300 acres?
Oh, I think there's more than that. I know that right around 2000, they were down to about 4,000 acres. And I imagine, I don't know, we were guessing earlier that probably about 2,000 now.
Oh, 2,000, okay. Yeah. You know, and I just remembered where the 300 came from. I was interviewing someone a number of years ago, and their prediction was it would probably continue to fall and then stabilize at around 300. And if it's stabilized at more than that, that's really a great thing. And today on Mouthful, we'll be talking in just a bit with Carol Kozlowski and with Stan Devoto. Can't have a four-way conversation because of the reality of equipment. So we're going to continue with Gay for a little bit longer here on Mouthful. And as you started writing for the Press Democrat in what year?
I started working in Summers when I was going to Cal in 1955.
Uh-huh. 1955.
So you can do the math. I just find it depressing.
Oh, no, I find it wonderful to have that arc of history and to have seen so many changes.
I've written a column since 59.
You've written a column since 59.
Yeah.
And you've done the two books, Santa Rosa, 19th Century Town, and Santa Rosa, a 20th Century Town.
Yeah, we seem to lack cleverness when it came to titles.
Well, what else do you think is important for the person who just comes here? And you know that habit. Someone moves to an area, and this happens all over, and the world is sort of invented the day they arrive.
Oh, yeah. That's what Keith Woods from the Chamber of Commerce in Santa Rosa used to say. The best day, the very best day in Santa Rosa, anybody will tell you, was the day they arrived, and it's all been downhill since then.
Yes. And a lot of people don't look back. So you change the name on a building. Someone moves the next day, and they forget that it was this amazing...
They thought it was always Wells Fargo, right?
Exactly. Yeah, they think, what do you mean Luther Burbank Center for the Arts? That sort of thing. So What sort of things do you think it's really important for us to continue to pass on to newcomers, to people who move here, to know about agriculture, and in particular agriculture as it relates to this apple that Slow Food is trying to help save?
I think that the overweening thing about Sonoma County, the thread that holds us together with our past, is the land. You know, this incredible land that people who came here early on wrote about and said that the wild grass grew tall enough to hide a man on horseback, you know. Dirt farmers could get real excited about that, and it's still the fertility, the kind of mother instinct of this land and our valleys. I think that's what we have in common with the past and have to hold on to.
Now, you're going to be writing about the Gravenstein.
I am.
Can you give us a preview at all?
Well, it's kind of what we've been talking about, some of the statistics of where it's gone and why and where it came from. And, you know, there's still old original Gravenstein apple trees on the hill above Fort Ross that the Russians brought. And the Russians came in 1812. I don't know just when they brought their first apples, but they brought apples and slow cherries. S-L-O-E cherries, like slow gin.
Gin.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
And
I remember that hangover.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It makes tequila look great. That's what I'll be writing about is the history. Uh-huh. Trying to kind of give a little perspective. That's sort of what I do now, because I only write twice a month, is I try to take something that's in the news now and lend a little historical perspective.
Mm-hmm. And you do such a wonderful job. You're such a treasure.
Thank you, Michelle.
I'm going to ask everybody who's on Mouthful today this question. So you're first. What's your favorite way to enjoy apples, or your favorite way to enjoy the Gravenstein?
Applesauce. Makes the best applesauce in the whole world.
How do you make it?
I make it by just cooking down the apple. Sometimes if I'm really feel like making a mess, I make it with the skins on, which some people say is very good, and then put it through a food mill. But I also like apples with chunks in it, so then I'll peel it, cook them down. Sometimes I put cinnamon in it. Sometimes I put a lemon peel in it. Mm-hmm. One or the other, not both, ever. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
that's how I make it.
I freeze it instead of cheese carts. What a great idea, freezing instead of canning.
Yeah.
That's certainly easier and neater.
It certainly is easier. Easier is good.
And it thaws just fine.
Yeah, you can even put it in a saucepan and thaw it if you want to. Yeah.
Okay, well, Gay LeBaron, thank you so much for being on Mouthful, and look forward to reading about the Gravenstein.
Thank you very much.
Okay, my next guest on Mouthful, and thank you again for being here in the audience and for tuning in when we broadcast this. So, Carol Kozlowski. Kozlowski Farms was one of the first businesses I discovered, certainly up in Sebastopol when I first moved here many, many, many years ago now, back in 1972, and I had probably been into Kozlowski's a couple of times before that because I was coming up here before I moved here. So, Carol, it's great to see you. You're a return guest.
Thank you so much, and this is great to be here, Michelle. Thank you for inviting us.
You bet. What year was Kozlowski Farms founded?
The business was founded back in 1948 when my mother and father got married, and they came to Sebastopol and bought their first apple farm in 1949. But one of the things that lots of people don't really realize is that my mother was born in Santa Rosa, and she moved to Sebastopol when she was 2 years old, and she's been in agriculture all her life. So she was the founding person in our family, and she lured my father to come and buy their first apple farm and become apple farmers.
No, we should say it's your mom is Carmen.
My mom
Carmen
is Carmen
Kozlowski. Mm-hmm. A lot of the recipes that you see at Kozlowski Farms are her recipes.
Yes, they are. She loves to start something, and then she kind of hands them over to Perry, Cindy, and myself, and she says, here.
You guys do this. Make a business.
We have to do something with this.
When do you first remember? What do you remember about the farm and about Gravensteins and all that when you were a little girl?
Well, since I was born into the apple industry of Sonoma County or Sebastopol area, I just remember always when the apples were ripe, it was time to go out there and pick the apples. And we had a packing house, and we would pack apples. And, of course, Gabe was talking about different brand. Back in the 1950s, our brand was the Mark Carroll brand. My father, Tony Kozlowski, was in partners with my uncle, my mother's brother, who was Martin Lorenzo. So his oldest son was named Mark, and my name was named Carroll. So they named our brand the Mark Carroll brand. Back in the 1960s, then my father changed our label to TK brand. But we always had a packing house, and we packed apples for the 3 months out of the summer, going into, you know, from early morning to 10, 12 o'clock at night.
Now, was it just the Gravenstein that you were growing at that point?
At that time, we had a lot of apples. Between the properties that my parents owned and properties that they leased, we probably farmed about 200, 250 acres of different varieties of apples. But I would say that maybe 70% of them were the Gravenstein apples. And, of course, we all know that the Gravenstein has that short-lived season, so it was almost work 24 hours a day.
Yeah, you just have to get them in, and it's almost like wine grapes.
You get them in, you get them contracted. We were running trucks back and forth to San Francisco Bay Area. We would run trucks to Los Angeles hauling our apples, our pickings of the day, because they were picked in the morning. They were packed at late afternoon to into the evening. The trucks were loaded. They took off for market around 11, 12 o'clock to be at the produce terminals.
Mm-hmm. Now tell us about the evolution, the beginnings of the farm stand. I think that's when a lot of people, especially in the 70s and 80s, people discovered you through the farm stand. I know that Julia Child was one of the visitors.
Oh, yes. Well, we just put a sign on the road that said homemade jams and apple butter and
did you start out with pies as well?
Back in the 1950s, yes, my mother did do pies. We did pies and fresh-squeezed apple ciders, cherries. Of course, this area was abundant in cherries also. Mm-hmm. So we had cherry cider along with the apple cider. The apple cider was the base for the cherry ciders. And we just evolved from there with different things. As you said, mother came up with these ideas, and once she came up with the ideas, it was time to start marketing them.
You were one of the first companies that I was aware of who started doing the fruit vinegars,
yes. Really
beautiful ones. And I still prefer yours because I think the genius of them is that they're low acid.
Yes.
So that flavor of the fruit really can shine through, and you can use them in a lot of ways that you can't use the ones that are stronger.
Mm-hmm. Well, we really try and have the fruit overpower the acidity of the vinegar, so it's mild. So it can be used in fruit salads. It can be used in your arugula salads. Anything that we, any kind of a salad that you really want, it fits nicely with it. And one of the my very favorite recipes is the one that you do with chicken livers.
Oh, chicken livers and blueberry vinegar.
And the blueberry vinegar,
oh, yeah,
yes.
That's really good. Mm-hmm. I haven't made that in a long time. Thank you for the reminder. Now, you have been involved in farming, agriculture, and the apple business during the downturn and from the peak and then the decline. Mm-hmm. What have been some of the challenges that you've had to deal with as people have looked elsewhere, really, for apples?
Well, I would think that, you know, it was tough. It was tough when our local co-op went out of business. And
when was that? Around what time?
It was back in, I can't remember the year, back in the 80s.
80s, sometime in the
80s. Back in the 80s and through there. But in other words, you had to get creative. And if you couldn't really diversify and think of new and innovative things to do, you were gone. You were gone. The banks were going to take over your farm. So what we did is my father and mother had the foresight. Well, that was back in the 60s, too. to plant red raspberries, and we just started making jams and jellies.
You've always had fabulous raspberries.
But still, Gravenstein, the apples are still part of our, I mean, that's our heritage. That's mm-hmm. my mother's heritage. In fact, we do now have vineyards. My brother, Perry, lives on our 25-acre homestead where my grandparents settled in on Sanders Road in Sebastopol. And we have the farm in Forestville, but Mother always says, I want apple trees around my house. Please, give me apple trees.
And how many acres are remaining of your apples now?
We probably farm about 40 acres of apples, mm-hmm. and then we have 17 acres of Pinot Noir grapes. Mm-hmm. And Perry heads up all the agriculture, mm-hmm. and he does our production also. We're fortunate enough that children are... My brother's daughter works for us full-time, Janae, and my sister's son, Kyle, who is a graduate of San Diego, has decided that he wants to come back and learn agriculture and production.
That's just such a great thing when you hear young people leaving college and they want to go into agriculture. Bless them. That's what has to happen.
And it's time for a new generation to mm-hmm. come on board. The new millennium, as they call themselves, I think, now. Mm-hmm.
What are some of your favorite ways to enjoy the Gravenstein?
Well, when it's Gravenstein season, I just go out and stand underneath that tree and find the biggest, juiciest apple I can find and pick it and just devour it there.
Right there.
But, of course, I was always taught you pick up all those wonderful apples off the ground and mm-hmm. come back and I peel them. And I love to do sautéed apples because you do a little sautéed apples with a little sugar, a little butter, and you can have it with so many different
absolutely.
So many different things, no matter what you're serving for dinner. It can even be an ice cream topping at the end of the day. So I always keep sautéed apples in my refrigerator.
That's a great tip. And you also always have frozen Gravenstein juice, don't you?
We do. We have fresh squeezed ciders. We make our Gravenstein apples pies. And we have pie tarts. And one of the things that a company that came to us is Mary's Pizza Shack. And they said, you know, we've always enjoyed your Gravenstein apples. We would like to serve your apple pie for our desserts. So Mary's Pizza Shack serves our apple pies in all their restaurants.
Oh, I didn't know that. Cool.
Yeah.
That's great to know. It's really great to know. So do you use all of the apples that you grow, that you harvest, or do you also sell apples?
We also sell
them. Wholesale.
We sell them wholesale. Perry's in charge of all the apples and the apple picking. But when it comes time, when the apples are ripe, since we do so much with apples ourselves, we bring them in, we clean them, we process, we'll slice them, and then we fresh freeze them. And those are the apples that we use all year long for our pies, for our tarts, and anything that we're going to do, any of our recipes. So we'll probably keep maybe about up to 10 tons of apples frozen in our freezer that will last us for the year.
That's a lot of apples.
That's a lot of apples.
10 tons. Yeah. That's a lot.
For different things, yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, before I let you go, Carol, I have to ask... you have so many other products, and since you started, I remember so clearly that first vinegar that I found. You've added a lot of products since that time, and the world of food has just evolved so much since then. I know that you have Chipotle chilies and some of the things you make, and back when I was first shopping there, I mean, you had to go to the Mission District in San Francisco. Nobody knew what Chipotles were if you didn't have a connection to the Mexican community. So my question is, what has become popular, the most popular things maybe that either surprised you or that just really reflect the changing awareness of Americans and food?
I just think that so many people want to try and experience all the different cultures out there. I always feel like even the things that we do are a blending of cultures. I mean, we have our German influence, our Spanish influence, and all those cultures are blended. And, of course, locally, our Hispanic communities, to take all these different flavors and to make them into our own our own special recipes. The chipotle sauces and to blend them with fruit. Who would have thought about that 20 years ago? And now, I mean, it's so popular. Everybody wants to know, what's your favorite products that you make? Well, for me, it's our mango and apricot roasted chipotle sauce. And my very favorite is our red raspberry vinegar. So right now we're making about 70 different items, just our processed items, and that vinegar, those chipotle sauces, pepper jellies.
It's, hot pepper jellies, nothing like them.
There's nothing like them, and they all taste different, and it's the blending of the peppers. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now we're making a 5-pepper jelly, and you put a little bit of that habanero in there, and it's just it sends you over the top.
Oh, that sounds really good. One of my favorite things to do during Gravenstein season is to make a thin-crusted, really thin-crusted apple tart, the kind that they make in France, that you see in France, thinner than any pizza you've ever seen. But then instead of brushing it with, say, currant jelly or apple jelly like you might traditionally, first of all, I mix some chipotle powder with the cinnamon when I put it on, and then I brush it with hot pepper jelly.
Isn't that
and,
wonderful?
Oh, it Ooh, just has to try that. Such a great combination of flavors.
Well, you know,
I love it.
One of the things with apple is such a, and there's a, it's a mild flavor. And so when you start to blend it with other vegetable, other fruits, or even you can use it with vegetables too, it helps take on the flavors of the fruits that you're blending it with. So it doesn't overpower. It just blends and makes things so nice and subtle.
And it almost boosts the flavor of the other flavors.
It does.
I guess so many juices that you see in the market, they may have pineapple, they may have all sorts of things, but that base is often apple juice.
It is. And that's what we've chosen to use for our line of spreads, because we do a line of 100% no sugar-added spreads, but we use apples.
So it's apples provides the sweetness that's
apple
needed.
Apple provides the sweetness, yes. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, back in the 1970s, we used to dry our own apples and use our own apples, and that's how we really started this. That was another recipe that Mother came up with the spreads, and the use of our own apples that we grow.
Well, you do such a great job, and I really appreciate you taking time on a Sunday morning to come be on Mouthful.
Thank you. Thank
and
you.
We should tell people, for those who may not know where Kozlowski Farm Stands is,
well,
tell them how to get there.
We're probably about 5 miles north of Sebastopol, almost to the little town of Forestville. The address is Forestville. And you can also find us online, www.kozlowskifarms.com.
Very easy to get to.
Well, thank you.
And it's Gravenstein Highway North, and you see a big sign there. You can't miss it. And if you do miss it, you can make a U-turn a little ways down the road. So, Carol, thanks so much. I hope you have a great apple season.
Oh, thank you very much. We appreciate that.
Coming up next, we're going to be talking with Stan DeVoto. You're listening to Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour here on KRCB. We are doing what has become an annual tradition, recording live at the Sebastopol Farmers Market on the Save the Gravenstein Day. And there is a new blog for the Sebastopol Farmers Market, sebastopolfarmmarket.com. They're on Facebook, too. Next thing you know, it's going to be Twitter. Look out. Anyway, we are going to talk now with Stan DeVoto, who, Stan, before we talk about apples, you have the most beautiful flowers.
Thanks. We spend a lot of time working on flowers. We've been growing flowers now for about 25 years. We started primarily with Gravenstein apples, and then we realized in order to make a living, we had to diversify. Mm-hmm. So we took some classes from the great Bob Kennard Sr. and the great Bob Kennard Jr., former instructors at the JC, and they got us started in the right direction.
And, you know, it's just such a great thing, making the world more beautiful with flowers. and helping keep the Gravenstein alive.
Right.
So how many acres of apples do you have?
Apples, we farm about 20 acres now. At one point, we had about 45 acres. And what we realized is that we had a lot of old trees, old varieties that just weren't working. And so what we did, we bit the bullet in 1988. We took out 20 acres of apples and replanted with about 50 other varieties. We did some English varieties, some cider varieties. We did eating varieties. We did some really cool varieties. Mm-hmm. We did some varieties that were horrible, that just didn't work. But for the most part, most of them did.
Now, the ones that didn't work, was that because of the location, soil, or
they were
just
prone,
bad apples?
They were prone to disease. As you know, in Sonoma County, we have the ocean influence. We have a lot of fog. So apple trees need help. Apple trees, they're not indigenous to this area, so they need to be fertilized, they need to be pruned, they need to be sprayed, whether you do it conventionally or organically, but apple trees need help.
So let's talk about a day in the life of a Gravenstein apple tree, or even a year in the life of a Gravenstein apple tree. Specifically, what do you have to do to take care of that tree?
Well, in the wintertime, after you've harvested, you have to coarse prune. And, you know, it's like split ends of a hair. If you don't prune your, if you don't cut your hair, you're going to have a lot of split ends, damaged hair. Just like apple tree, you have to thin it out. You have to let more light into the tree. It has to be pruned every year to get a consistent crop.
And what time of year? I know with grapes, you wait until the vines have gone dormant before you prune. What about with an apple tree?
Pretty much the same from December till about March.
Okay, about the same time.
Once the leaves are gone, it's much easier to prune. And just till about harvest time. Bloom time.
Okay, and then during that dormant period, is the tree hungry, or do you just not feed it until you're getting close to bloom time?
You don't have to feed your trees until they start growing. But what we do at the farm in the fall, we disc after we harvest. We seed a cover crop of vetch or bell beans. It adds so much nitrogen to the soil and to the tree. And then we disc that in April or May, depending on the springtime.
And then what's the first, when it starts to wake up and greet this spring, what's the first sign?
Well, the first sign, the buds start swelling. And we do it organically, so we end up spraying a lot more than we normally used to do. You come in with a dormant spray of oil with copper. And then right when the buds start swelling, the flowers are just about out, you spray your trees with lime and sulfur. And then what you do, you basically watch the weather. If it rains, you got to go in with sulfur. Because like I said, these trees are not indigenous to this area.
And what is it doing? What are you protecting them from when you spray?
From mildew. And what happens, if you get mildew in the blossoms, the fruit won't set. And consequently, you're done for the year. So you've got to be on your game in the springtime with apples.
Okay, and then so you get the blossoms, and then you get the leaves.
And then you get the leaves. First you get a leaf.
You get a leaf first.
And then you get the blossom.
Okay.
And then the fruit forms. And then what we do, we come in the orchard with these pheromones, and we put about 200 per acre, and we clip them way up into the tree. It's very tedious and time-consuming, and it confuses the mating cycle of the codling moth.
Okay. And so, and what form is the pheromone? Is it on a little...
It's a little clip.
It's just a little clip.
And it's a sweet-smelling pheromone, and it confuses the mating cycle, and it really works. And then we have pheromone traps in the orchard, about one every 5 acres, where we count the number of moths we get per trap, and then when the count's way up, we spray. We use an organic spray, and sometimes it works.
Now, someone told me, or I was reading something, that when an apple tree flowers, when it blossoms, you have to go out, and there might be 5 blossoms all like together, and you have to go out and thin them so that you get good fruit. Well, is that something that you have to do?
In fact, we're still thinning fruit now. Basically, you might have a cluster of, you know, maybe 20 or 30 pieces of fruit in one cluster. We normally thin that cluster to about 4 to 6 inches apart per fruit. Obviously, you get better size, you get better flavor, and you get better sunlight, you get better air movement, and you get less bug damage. So that's why we do it,
And that must take a lot of time.
We're still doing it. We started in May.
And you started in May. Wow. And then how do you sell your apples?
Well, unfortunately, we sell them to the local brokers who sell them down to Watsonville. A lot of our fruit is made into Martinelli's apple cider. We just found out yesterday that they're not taking any Gravensteins this year, which is a really disappointment.
What's
to all
wrong
the
with them?
Well, I guess business is really bad now.
Wow, they're not taking any Gravensteins?
No.
I thought that was the one they all wanted for flavor.
That's
the most
the one
flavorful
they want,
of the apples.
But I guess they have a big inventory of juice, and they said they can't afford to buy any apples. Uh-huh. Our fresh apples, we sell at 9 different farm markets. And then we have a distributor in Occidental, Terra Sonoma, who goes to Berkeley, Oakland, and San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And they go to, like, Monterey Market, Berkeley Bowl. They go to all the restaurants in the city. Mm-hmm. And that's our main distributor. And then we have accounts with the Berkeley School District through Greenleaf Produce. And we have a couple of other distributors at the wholesale market. Yeah.
Good. What about your flowers? How do you sell those?
Well,
farmers markets?
Farmers markets across the street here at Whole Foods, of course. We sell them. We do about 7 or 8 Whole Foods, so they do buy locally, which is nice. We do about 9 farm markets around the greater Bay Area. We do St. Helena, Napa. We go as far as Walnut Creek, and we do the Ferry Building.
Oh, you do the Ferry Building?
Yes.
And do you do Marin?
We do Marin also.
Yeah, I've seen you at the Marin Market.
Right.
Do you have a favorite market?
St. Helena.
St. Helena, tell us about it.
Well, St. Helena is great because people come by, they're in a hurry, they say, Stan, they lay down $50, which I like, and they say, give me $50 worth of flowers, I'll be back in 5 minutes. Plus, the people are great. You know, they all own wineries, they own restaurants, and I've met some really interesting people there.
Yeah, $50 worth of flowers and
nice.
Your choice. It sounds like a pretty
good
deal. Where exactly is your farm?
We're up on Gold Ridge Road. We've been there since 1975.
Do you do any farm visits? Are you on farm trails or anything?
We were on farm trails. My kids now are going back to college. There's nobody to wait on the customer, so we have an honor box there. People come and buy and just leave the money, and they can do self-guided tours.
Oh, you can?
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. Yeah.
And how do people find you? Do you have a website?
Yeah, devotogrow@aol.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Devoto, D-E-V-O-T-O.
Grow, G-R-O-W, at AOL.
Well, thank you so much, Stan, and I hope you have a fabulous Gravenstein season. And here at the market, I'm looking out, and I see that the fondettes are we should give a great hand for Stan. Thank you so much. But a hand for the girls who are going to be singing in just a few minutes. They're dressed in beautiful red and black outfits with red flowers in their hair. So if you are here at the farmer's market, you are in for a real treat with the fondettes. I discovered them a year or so ago when I stopped by KSRO for Steve Jackson's show, The Drive, and have wanted to see them here at what I consider my market, my hometown market. And if you're listening on the air, there's a tease, but I'm going to try to get some... I'm going to see if they have any recordings so that we can bring you the fabulous fondettes here on KRCB as well. That wraps up our interviews from Gravenstein Day at the Sebastopol Farmers Market. It was a great day. And, you know, if you haven't had a Gravenstein yet this year, don't forget, they're the apple that doesn't keep. You need to eat them right away. That's part of their brilliance. They are the first apple to ripen. They're here when all of the storage apples from last winter are gone, but they're ephemeral. They last about 3 weeks. That's it, and then you get to think about them until next year. The fondettes, you could see, were arriving right as we were wrapping up, and they gave an absolutely riveting performance after Mouthful. And as luck would have it, they were selling CDs. If you haven't seen these three girls yet, they're from Santa Rosa High School. They graduated just a couple months ago, I believe, and I also believe that they will be attending Sonoma State University, so we will have them for a while longer. Really check them out. They put on... They're as much fun as a basket of kittens. Absolutely adorable. So meet me here next week for another tasty episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour on KRCB. Have a great week, and I'm going to leave you with another song by the Fondettes and then Apple by the Pickets.
Tree with with anyone else but me till I come.
If you picked an apple, I'd pick a man. What a terrible farmer you'd be. Well, you take all of the wisdom that's lying around and leave the best apples high on the tree.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.
Let's go.